Welcome to the Empathic Mastery Show. I'm your host, Jennifer Moore, and I'm so glad you're here. This is a place where we talk about what it means to be highly sensitive and empathic, how this impacts all aspects of our lives, and we explore tools, resources, and solutions so we can shift from absorbing all the thoughts, feelings, and energy of the world around us to being beacons for calm, love, and healing. Hey there, everybody. I have a lovely guest today, Sydney Decker. We got to connect on her awesome podcast, The Goddess and the Medicine Woman, and we clicked. And so I wanted her to come here and have a conversation about all kinds of cool stuff. Sydney Decker is a multifaceted Ayurveda health counselor, the visionary owner of Inner Element Wellness, and an intuitive healer and light worker. Sydney's expertise lies in the holistic realm of Ayurveda, where they seamlessly blend ancient wisdom with modern practices to bring about profound transformation in their clients' lives. At Inner Element Wellness, she has created a sanctuary of self-discovery and rejuvenation, offering an array of Ayurvedic bodywork, energy work, and wellness consultations. Sydney's abilities extend to the realm of intuitive healing and light work. With an unwavering commitment to guiding others back home to themselves, she assists clients in illuminating their inner light, empowering them to create a life they truly love. Through the powerful combination of energy work, visualization, meditation, intuitive guidance, and a deep understanding of human nature, Sydney helps individuals unlock their full potential, harness their inner wisdom, and embrace their true essence. Sydney is also the author of Cleanse Your Energy, a practical guide to proper energy hygiene, and as I mentioned before, co-host of the Goddess and the Medicine Woman podcast. Sydney, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm still adjusting to hear my bio. I'm like, wow, this woman sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's me.
It's me. Wow, I did all those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yes.
So I always love to start with let's start at the very beginning. And I definitely want to make sure that one of the things that we do is we define Ayurveda. Because okay. You had been talking about how people don't necessarily know the word. They don't necessarily know what it means. So I'm actually thinking, let's just, since it's front of mind, before we go into your childhood, your story, what it's meant, what it's been like to be a highly sensitive empath, because you, like me, identify as an empath, let's just get the definition of Ayurveda like out of the way. Could you give us sort of like the, you know, the elevator speech version of, or kind of like the cocktail party explanation of what is Ayurveda?
Yeah. So Ayurveda is an ancient holistic healing practice that has been traced back to being on the planet for about over 5,000 years. Some trace it back as far as 7,000 years. It kind of depends. But the consensus has been 5,000 years. And it is the very first healthcare practice that human beings really, I want to say, like, wrote down and began to like put into the Vedic texts. So that's why it's like also Ayurveda. It originated in India and it influences a lot of other healing practices. It influences Chinese medicine. It even influences Western medicines as far as like even pharmaceuticals go and surgery go. So a lot of everything that we use, even in our modern world, still comes from certain findings that were traced back to 5,000 years ago within the Ayurvedic medical scope. So it is a healing science. It's actually, Ayurveda is translated to science of life. So Ayur is life. Veda is knowledge. So knowledge of life. So yeah, it's when you break it down, it's a Sanskrit term that just means knowledge of life. So it's actually really amazing. One of the most used folklore stories of Ayurveda is that 20 sages, they went off together. 19 of them went into a deep meditative state for several months, while the other, the 20th sage sat watch and guard. And then as soon as all the 19 sages came out of meditation, they had the same download about how to end suffering for human beings, in the sense of what, because a lot of villagers were starting to get sick in different ways. So they all had a consensus that we needed to be more in line with nature, and that the human being is not outside of nature. It is very much a big component to nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, and then as soon as I learned that, my health changed a lot too, because Ayurveda focuses on the five elements, air, space, fire, water, and earth, and how these combine to make our natural world, and how they also combine to make our natural body. And not just our body, but our mind and emotions. So emotions have elements and our thought processes have elements. So when we start to take into consideration the quality of energy over quantity of items or medicines or whatever, Ayurveda is a big component of quality. So the quality of food you're eating, the quality of taste, the quality of life is very important on Ayurveda over just, okay, take this much medication or get this surgery or anything like that. It's get in tune with your body, get in tune with the qualities that you need. Ayurveda also really focuses on like attracts like. So it's important to use certain qualities. It's like, it's the science of like balance. So if you say, for example, you're someone who struggles a lot with acid reflux and you're eating a lot of spicy foods, you're going to increase that acid reflux continuously. So what Ayurveda or an Ayurveda practitioner would say is like, okay, so the quality of your energy in your body physically right now is fire. The quality of food you're eating is fire. So what's a quality that we need to bring in to reduce or lessen this quality of fire? Water, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to bring in more cucumber. So cucumber water would be an example to start drinking. We need to bring in taking midnight strolls in the moonlight. Like some of the stuff is like simple, but it's very profound to do when you look at the energy and the quality. So as someone who is highly sensitive and is an empath, as soon as I started to learn Ayurveda, my life began to make so much sense, because we as empaths, right, are always in tune with the quality of energy and the environment in which we are a part of that energy. So it started to help me to realize when I'm eating specific foods, the quality of energy that I'm going to get from that. Also going into certain environments, I started to pay attention to the quality of energy in those environments. And then also Ayurveda is a big component of consciousness and how the quality of consciousness is important too. So there's different levels of consciousness. And so as soon as I started to realize that, there's different levels of energy and the quality of consciousness. So I started to really sit with that, and it just gave me permission to become more in tune with my sensitive nature, more in tune with my intuition, more in tune with my body. Because my body, by becoming someone who practices Ayurveda, I can speak for myself. When I work with clients, it's very important for me to teach my client how to listen to their body.
Yes. Yes.
So that's what Ayurveda has given to me, is that power and that coming home and asking my body and realizing my body is very intelligent. Not only is my body intelligent, but I am a multidimensional, multifaceted being. So Ayurveda opened up a lot of doors for me personally. And when I bring these qualities to my clients, it also opens doors for them, because it approaches their life individually. So Ayurveda is the science or knowledge of life. And then it helps you to understand what that knowledge can do for you.
Mm-hmm. And how to live harmoniously, understanding who you are in relation to all of this. So you mentioned that, and this is kind of the perfect segue to go backwards, that, you know, it really changed your life, that it was really like, this was like the big piece of the puzzle. And I'm fascinated by, I'm in the process of working on a book that will be publishing in, you know, sometime in the middle of 2024. And my guides is a channel book. And one of the things they're talking about is the fact that the earth went through this, what they call a retrograde, 5,000 years, 5 to 10,000 years ago. And what's fascinating is the need for and the arrival of Ayurveda correlates with what my guides are talking about with the change on the planet that kind of precipitated the need for healing tools and things, largely because we bought into the great, like we went into the great sleep and we forgot who we are, what we are, and that we are part, that we are cells in the body of this earth, as opposed to these humans that sort of think of themselves as everything. But I wanna go back to you and your life before Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. What was it like as a highly sensitive person? How did this affect you? Tell me about your childhood. Tell me about your early experiences.
Yeah. So I just had this whole, as soon as you asked this question, this whole flash of, I think I was always meant to find Ayurveda, because when I look at my upbringing, and I'm about to tell you about my upbringing, I'm like, I was living Ayurvedically already. Very in tune with nature. So I grew up in a very small town, like one red light. I graduated with 80 kids. Like, you could drive your tractor to school, like if you really wanted to, like very small. And I grew up on 500 acres of land as well. My family owned 500 acres. It was once a farm. Then there's a little bit of time when I was growing up that it was a golf course, and then they shut down the golf course and it became just like land again. But it was, I just remember saying to my mom all the time as a kid, like, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to go play in heaven. I'll be back for lunch. Like, I would use those words and I would always come back and I would already always tell her about how me and the fairies did this, or the angels did this, or me and my imaginary friend. I had an imaginary friend named Jessica too, which is funny. So I would always play with her and I would always come back home and tell her how I was in heaven today. And one of Jessica's dogs had 50 puppies, so I got to play with the puppies. So I had this very, very magical imagination. And I remember even going outside and I would climb this tree in my front yard and I would sit there, and I would sit there for like hours, because we always had like almost forced outdoor time, and especially in the summer. I think it was like my mom's way of like, I need to clean the house and like, you guys gotta go.
Yeah. I need you out of my hair. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So during that time, because I wouldn't always, like, my brother would always like grab his crocodile and like go like to his like fake crocodile and like go on these adventures and stuff too. But, and he loved it. Like, my mom would have to call him home, but like sometimes I'd be like, hey, can I come inside? So I got used to climbing this tree, and I would sit in this tree and I would become a bird, or I would become a deer, or I would become a flower, or I would just like remember sitting here, like sitting there, and be able to like, and I'm not making this up, like, no, where people are like, oh, in the mind, like, you know, like, I was a bird. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I was a bird.
Are you a Game of Thrones fan?
A little bit. I haven't seen a lot of it.
Okay. So there's a term within Game of Thrones. Brandon became the three-eyed raven, but the term in Game of Thrones, they refer to this specifically as warging. Like, and to warg, and I think it's spelled like W-O-R-G, but warging is when you merge your consciousness with another being. And so he would warg and merge his consciousness with the three-eyed raven and fly and be able to see everything. Or he'd merge his consciousness with one of the dire wolves and be able to see through the eyes of the dire wolf. And so what you're talking about, I mean, exist within pop culture at the very least, and that, you know, in Game of Thrones, but, you know, what is it? Is it J.R.R. Martin or H.R.R. Martin? I can never remember. Anyway, Sir Martin, like, talks specifically about this phenomenon and describes almost exactly what you're talking about.
That's awesome. Yeah. Because throughout my life, even in like yoga classes or breathwork classes, like, actually, this one time, I'll get back to my childhood, but saying this brought two things out. So one time in my yoga class, I became a snake, not in my mind's eye. Like, I became a snake, and I had this whole experience where I was a snake and I was slithering on the earth and I could feel the earth vibration, and I became a snake. And then I was trying to hunt as a snake, and I was asking these rats, And I realized what the earth was showing me was how nature really is forgiving. And so there was these two rats that I had that were like, no, you can't eat me. No, you can't eat me. When we as human beings think that it's awful, right? Like they just, you actually as a being give permission for another being to eat you. So then I was coming up on this other rat that you could tell was a little bit older, didn't want to be here anymore and gave me permission to eat it. So I ate it. So that was like very, like I came out of that, like, and my yoga teacher was like, what just happened? Like, cause, and I told her and she was like, so that doesn't happen to just anyone,
no.
But it does happen. Cause she's had an experience like that before. And she said, pay attention to whatever it is, the message is. So I took it as that was my message, was that there's so much more going on energetically than we are aware of. There's actual, like everything has a choice. So that was really profound. And then this other, and in that time, I just started doing all this yoga work and this breath work. And I was moving things and feeling things. And I was practicing Ayurveda and all these things. And I was laying there in bed one night. And all of a sudden I became a moth, and I was a moth, and I was underneath my, I forgot to turn my living room light off. And I was a moth underneath like the light, and I could see like the dust, and I was this, and I was a moth. And then I like was myself, and I was like, I better go turn that light off. But that was like wild too. And that moth was actually the really big start. Cause right after then I had the dark night of the soul. So I think that was like also the world's and the universe's way of saying like, you're about to, here's the light, remember the light and remember the transformation. You're about to go through some heavy shit. And that's because I had to go through some stuff to really step into becoming an Ayurveda practitioner, I believe. So growing up, I think this kind of like answers, like, I've always been sensitive to energy. Yeah. I've always been very, very sensitive. I would have a lot of things happen. Like when my grandmother died when I was 4, I saw her. She came and saw me after she passed. And I told my entire family, and I hadn't even known that she had died yet when I told them. And they were all like, all their mouths dropped open because I was just eating cereal, being like, yeah, grandma came and saw me and she kissed me here, here and here. And she said that she was okay. And that I probably wouldn't be seeing her very much. And that I was loved and that we're all loved and that she's okay. And so there was that. And then like growing up, I could always, it was, and I was always getting in trouble for it too, or getting yelled at. I realized like I could pick up anything anyone was feeling, like my mom, my dad, like especially my dad, who struggled a lot with alcoholism growing up. And I was always like watching him, like, you're, something's wrong. And you know, an alcoholic does not want to be questioned, doesn't want to be. So that was a big thing for us. Like, it was always like, he was always getting angry or denying. And I remember at 9 years old, I sat him down at the table because I was, and I would go to my mom and be like, there's something wrong with my dad. And my mom was like, you're 9. Like, and I was telling her this since I was 7. So she was like, I think she thought maybe hearing it from me would be helpful for my dad. But then I think it just really like made my dad feel even more guilty because his 9-year-old is picking all this up energetically and he didn't want that. So I just could always feel all the things. And it's been my whole entire life, like friends, this, that, like I could always tell if someone was going to pass away or whatever it is. I would get a lot of just images, feel things, see things, know things. I've had a lot of like very prophetic dreams before too, growing up. And one of the big things that really started to make me very aware of my feelings was when I became a teenager and I hit high school. And I started to have all these anxiety attacks where when I would go to school, I mean, like they would come on after lunch and I would pass out and I would be in the nurse's office and I would just feel so heavy. And my mom, at first everyone was like, okay, this is anxiety and this is depression. And then, and my dad had left and all this stuff was happening in my life for sure. But I realized, like looking back on it now, being a projector, knowing that I'm a projector, knowing how much I plug into everyone's energy, knowing just also just the chaos of high school, that energy became so overwhelming for me to have to like process and feel into, because you know, in that, when you're in high school, no one feels good. So I just felt like I was taking on so many different energies that I, and at that time, like if I were to try to talk about it, no one was really talking about mental health. Like it was still very like hush, hush.
Yes.
But I started to like Google things back when I was in high school. And that's when the term empath came up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know, there's this book, and I can't remember exactly when it was written. I think it was like 2008, 2012 or something like that. But it was like the Empath Survival Guide or something.
Yeah,
like
by
that.
Judith Orloff. It's kind of one of the classics. Yeah.
Yeah. So when that book came out, my mom got it for me because she was just like, I read the definition of empath and I think it's you. So even my mom and my dad, and because my dad was still alive, a lot of people were like, this is you. This is you. Because like a lot of the stuff in that book was how I responded to things or how I felt about things or like the animal stuff. Like you would see me with animals and all the stuff. So my mom was very in tune because she could just tell I was always sensitive or I could pick up things even in her field and stuff like that. So I never finished that book, but I was gifted it. And I did start to read it and it did help me a bunch. So that's kind of when I started to really identify as an empath. And then I think slowly after empath was a thing in a more broad, generalized way, like highly sensitive being came out and those types of things. And I come to understand that they're somewhat different, but I believe that I'm both of those.
Yes.
I don't know how else
yes.
to explain that.
So here's my take on this. My experience is that being a highly sensitive person means that you are very sensitive to your environment. You are often very emotionally sensitive. You are, you know, you can be sensitive on a sensory level. A lot of highly sensitive people deal with sensory processing things. But there may not be the paranormal aspect of it that empaths have. Whereas in my travels, I have yet to meet an empath who is not also a highly sensitive person.
Yeah.
So what I've seen is that highly sensitive people may or may not be empaths, but empaths are almost always highly sensitive people. And so not only do we pick up on we're sensitive to light, we're sensitive to sound, we're sensitive to fragrance, we're sensitive to sensation and like, you know, the shirt collar or the tag on the back of our shirt.
Which I'm like itching right now.
Yeah. We're sensitive. So we pick those kinds of things up. We're sensitive to, you know, watching the news. We're sensitive to seeing things and over-identifying with stuff. But then on top of it, we have this almost unexplainable capacity to feel things that we should not be able to feel. Like it's not just visual cues. And, you know, at least in my experience, most of the empaths I talk about, like a lot of us were feeling the energy prior to the Hamas and Israel and all of that. Like, anywhere between like a few days before to a few weeks before, we were in that like, what's coming? What's happening? That is not where you're watching and getting visual cues or information and projecting your emotions into that. That is like you're feeling something that you have that doesn't make sense why you're feeling that. So that's my personal distinction.
Yeah,
basically. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's super helpful. Because I agree. I agree with that. Especially with the empath part. That stuff is like highly sensitive. Like, yes, I have to like, I get overwhelmed and I have to kind of be like, okay, I need solitude. But then there's things like, and I think too, that the empath is being called upon. By no means are we better than anyone.
No.
But there is a component or work here that I believe we have a particular job to do.
Yes.
So, and I can feel it, like I'm getting called on more and more, because as soon as you said the whole thing about the Hamas and Israel, I, about a week prior to it, had posted on my social media a peace meditation and said that October is going to be very, very, very intense. And so you may need this. Not knowing exactly what was going to happen. And then literally a week later, it all broke out.
Right, right.
So yes, that when you said that particular part, I'm like, and I can usually feel things like sometimes 6 months before
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
too. and I can pick up things going on. Like, I started to think, it was really very interesting. I started to think a lot about Matthew Perry. And I was thinking about Friends, and I was thinking about Chandler, and I was like, this is interesting. Then he passed away.
Right.
And I was like, was I thinking about him because of that? Or like, you never know what that whole thing is.
Right.
But that happens to me too. Or yeah. Like, I'm sure as like empaths too. I think, is this more of an empath thing or is a highly sensitive thing, is knowing when someone's going to contact you? Like, before even my friend calls me in 20 minutes, I'll hear like she's decided she's going to call me.
That seems like an empath thing to me, because to me, highly sensitive is, and some people may disagree about the distinctions between these, but to me, highly sensitive is about our relationship to the seen world and is about the things that are going on in our environment that our sensory awareness is picking up on. Mm-hmm. Empath for me is the part that can pick up on things that exist outside of our immediate sphere. Empath is the part of us that is like, you haven't spoken to your friend in weeks, but somehow you know that they're going to call you. Mm-hmm. That to me is the empath side. Whereas, you know, the highly sensitive part of us is the part that you're out with a friend. They're not speaking about something, but you can sort of feel this undercurrent of emotion. You can read that their body language is off, that there's something going on. And maybe you're feeling that kind of like bunched up distress coming from them. That to me is within the realm of the highly sensitive. And it's the, when suddenly you're feeling things and then you get a phone call, a couple, you know, like you're suddenly thinking about Matthew Perry. And the next thing you know, you see the news that, you know, sadly he died. That is for me, the difference between, and what I will say is that in my travels, the difference between what distinguishes an empath from a psychic is that a lot of times psychics know that the data that they're picking up is coming from is larger than them, their individual identity, that they know that the information is coming from outside of themselves. And so they see it or hear it or perceive it or know it as the source that it's coming from. Whereas what I've noticed with many empaths is that the information we get comes through a lot of times as we process it as if it is our own.
Yes.
I have a client who will have these experiences where all of a sudden she'll start thinking these weird thoughts or worrying about a health issue or something as if she's the one going through it. And then suddenly she'll be like, something will happen and she'll be like, oh, that's not mine. This is coming from this other person. Mm-hmm. And so but the other thing is there's such an intersection. And again, interestingly, it's almost like psychic. If we had a Venn diagram, empath would be in the middle of highly sensitive, psychic, and neurodiverse or neurodivergent.
Okay. Yeah.
That we're in the middle of that Venn diagram.
Cause I know, I feel like I pick up every little piece of all of those.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so, because, you know, the psychic is going to pick up about Matthew Perry, you know, it's just such a fascinating way in which being an empath, because again, as I was saying, I've rarely met, like, you can be highly sensitive without being an empath. I think you can also be a psychic without being an empath, but it is very rare that you can be psychic. I mean, you can be an empath without having psychic ability. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is that intersection, that kind of confusion that happens with being an empath. We could go on and on about this. I want to go back to, you talked about the dark night of your soul, you know, like, I mean, it sounds like you had a really spectacular childhood in the sense of, or magical childhood in the sense that you were on 500 acres of land. You got to spend time in the trees. You were, you know, becoming one with everything and experiencing yourself as birds and insects and all this amazing stuff, and dealing with an alcoholic dad. Like, that does not sound like an easy thing. Mm-hmm. How did you get, like, childhood, high school years, like, let's, like, the process to get to that dark night of the soul? Like, say more.
Yeah. So at about the age of 7, I learned a lot more about all of this that I will, when I say these things, like, I didn't know it at the time, obviously, but I do with my study of Ayurveda and doing my yoga practice and being on my healing journey, help piece all this together for me. So when I was 7, the first 7 years of your life, you're umbrellaed under your mother's energy. So yes, you're very much a part of what she believes. And so you don't necessarily identify as an individual in the world yet. But when you turn 7, you start to become more self-aware. And so you have your own aura. So you're starting to develop your own aura and your own energy at that time. And I, like I said, up until the age of 7, was on, my mom is a phenomenal protector. Let's just say that. Phenomenal, phenomenal. So up until about 7, I thought my life was magic, complete, total magic. I was always protected under her. My mom is a very loving, kind, giving person who took on a lot for the family. So at the age of 7, I remember one day I went down to get the Three Ninjas. I was obsessed with the Three Ninjas, and I brought it back home, and my mom had left me downstairs with my dad. And I could, as soon as I walked in the door, I felt weird. And my dad was passed out in the chair, which wasn't not normal. But for the first time ever, I realized there's something weird about it. Mm-hmm. And so my mom was like, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to watch what I want. She had a TV up there. She's like, you watch your Three Ninjas down here with your dad. It'll be fine. And I was like, I even remember being like, I don't know about this. But I was like, okay. And so I was sitting there. I was halfway through the movie. And I remember that my dad got up and he was like stumbling around and just like mumbling and like knocking into walls and stuff. And I just was like, it was the first time that I was aware that my dad was not my dad. Mm. Like, because he was drunk. He had obviously drank so much, passed out, got up and was just trying to like move around. But I was trying to talk to him and I was like, dad, daddy, like, and he wasn't, he was just mumbling and he was like falling over and he was like knocking into things and he wasn't making sense. And for a 7-year-old, that's very scary and it's very alarming. And so I like remember like running upstairs to my mom and like hopping in bed with her and being like, something has dad, like something's wrong with him. And not realizing that at that time, and then I became hyper fixated on my dad after that, ever since then. But I realized at that time that I really was actually seeing and picking up empathically my dad's struggles. And so I became very, very, very in tune with his struggle and his pain. And I remember at the age of 9, because I, as soon as that happened. So if you think about how the auras developed, my aura became very intensified. So it went from my mom and I was like, my dad, like I have to protect him. So I became very plugged into him. And at the age of 9, I remember saying to the universe before I fell asleep that one night, there's something wrong with my dad and I want to help him. So whatever darkness he has, please let me take some of that on, which should not have been done.
No. But we do that. We throw ourselves under the bus, and especially depending on the family system we grow up in, a lot of us believe that it is our role to do the emotional heavy lifting. We come in with these family agreements that the empath is the one who does the work. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was growing up like the drama queen. Like I would always have this big lip that would like go like this, and I would start to cry and it would like quiver. And my dad would always say like, you better put that away or I'm going to sit on it. And I would go, but like, I was always being told I was being too emotional, or I'm a drama queen, or to suck it up, or to get tougher, or rub dirt on it, or I'll give you something to cry about. Like, so that was also
rub
a thing.
Dirt on it.
Yeah. I was always like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember at 9, really taking that on. And then at 10, my parents separated. So my dad ended up moving across the country to Arizona. Mm. And I became, so he was gone for like 2 years. By 12, that's when your hormones change. So I was starting to change. And I believe that all that darkness that I started to take on, especially at 9, started to get built up more and more and more. And then my own individual stuff started. And so I became very, very anxious and very depressed and actually even suicidal. So I tried to take my own life in high school when I was 16 and it started to build up then. And then that was just a very intense time. And then I went to college. And then when I was a sophomore in college, I tried to take my own life again. And not knowing at this time that my dad was also very much struggling with that at the same time as me. And so he was struggling with that. And I think that, like I said, I had taken some of that on. And so I tried to take my own life. So it was in 2014 was when my dad did take his own life. And I was feeling that build up. I mean, I remember the week before it happened, I was crying to my mom saying something bad's going to happen. I don't know what it is. And I was actually having like the Grim Reaper in my bedroom. Like I'm not making that up. I've never seen the Grim Reaper before this or after this. But for a week, I could not sleep because every single night I would wake up to this figure in my room telling me like someone was going to die. And at that time, I didn't know what that was. I couldn't, I was in college, but like I was not aware of my gifts and stuff like I am now. So then 2014, my dad passed. So it was 2015 that I found Ayurveda. So 2014, my dad took his own life. And so I believe that's when my dark soul really started. I thought I had gone through several before then, because I was kind of, before my dad died, I've been given the word, I've come across the word twin flame, dark night of the soul, like those types of things. But so I had thought maybe with like me taking my own life was my dark night of the soul. And I think it was like a reflection of that. But it wasn't until after my dad's passing and I found Ayurveda and I started to do the healing work that my dark night of the soul really took place. And that's when I started to become very aware of the things that I needed to heal. I became very aware of my childhood, my patterning, how, because like when someone dies too, and I know we talked a little bit about this, you take on their karma. What's next? You're the next in line. So if you're ready and you're willing.
You're the terminal point on the DNA. And
yes.
And you get this energetic assimilation.
And that's exactly what happened. And I mean, when my dad passed away, I could tell that my gifts were really intensified because he tried to appear to me. He tried to become an apparition to me. And it was the night after he took his own life, like literally that day we found out, it was that night that he started to form, tried to come to me. I was by myself for the first time and I was in my brother's living room laying on the couch and it was like 3 a.m. and I just heard this motorcycle sound and it got really, really loud and it started far away. And then it got really, really loud. And then it seemed like the motorcycle was in the room with me. And then every single hair in my body stood up. And then I literally saw like white in the air. Like I'm not like in a dream state or anything, like actual apparition, like you would see in movies starting to form. And like I remember
ectoplasm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember screaming, stop, I'm not ready. And immediately everything stopped. The apparition stopped. The motorcycle noise stopped, all the things. And then as soon as I could move, I ran upstairs to my brother to wake him up because I was just like, this was too much. And I appreciate that from my dad. I think he probably was like, this is my way of letting her know I'm okay, but too soon.
Well, and it sounds like maybe you inherited some of the drama queen from him in the sense that, like, I mean, that is not a gentle way to come and visit with your daughter.
No.
There are so many questions I've got for you and also some thoughts. One is that you said something that I think is really important to clarify in that you set a boundary and he went away. And I think that sometimes people don't realize that we do have a certain amount of like, we can say, I'm not ready for this. I can't handle this. Please, you know, like modulate this or stop. And they do. And so I think that was something I just wanted to really pull out of this. I was also really thinking about your dad and wondering, like, I mean, it really sounds like there was this kind of interesting intersection between what's yours, what's not yours, what's his. And I was like, were you even suicidal for your own benefit or your own self, or were you mirroring his? And then I was also like, Did your dad, was your dad being like, did your dad have the same gifts? Was he experiencing himself as something other than himself? Like, was he self-medicating with alcohol because he had no tools and no means of understanding this? So was your, I mean, do you know, was your dad a magical person or psychic sensitive?
Yeah, my dad was a very sensitive person. And I learned more about this after his passing, after my mom. My mom kind of opened up a little bit about this, and then his sister did. Mm-hmm. And he was always like in tune. And even me and him, he was sober for a little bit that I got to live with him when I was older in college. And it was like this ordained time in both of our lives that we, he even wrote in my, in the letter to me that it was probably the best time of his entire life. Mm. Yeah. So it was, and we were very much, we were on a spiritual journey. He was on a spiritual journey. He was taking me to AA meetings with him so he could, and every single coin that he got, he gave to me. And he just was like really like trying. And I truly, truly do believe. And he was even up until the year before he passed, was got an LLC to start this business. It's called To Live. It was called To Live and To Let Live. He has an LLC to this day. And it was, he was in AA, but he found that it was limiting because you have to constantly say that I am an alcoholic, which he got to a point that he didn't like that.
Yeah.
But he loved the sponsorness. He loved having a sponsor. And he loved the idea of finding someone in tune with what you're doing. So he was creating a business, To Live and To Let Live, that was like an online sponsorship where you could come on and you could find a sponsor in whatever it is, whether you were, whether it was drugs and alcohol or whether it was empaths or whether it was whatever you were trying to do, an artist, have an artist sponsor, like to keep you going, to keep you moving, to help you live and to help other people live the life that they want to live. And so it was this like profound thing that he was even trying to do because he was like, as soon as I found a sponsor, as soon as I found someone like-minded, I felt better. So he was trying to create a forum and a platform where people could come and meet and not to date, like to actually get to a better place in their lives and find a sponsor. So I thought that was super, super amazing. And it was going to be a nonprofit thing. And one of my life goals is to do this somehow. He has all of his notes and everything. So I have that. But he, like, that's the type of guy he was, you know, he was like that. And after, because I came across human design after he passed away, I learned that I'm a projector and I learned that he was a projector. So I already know that he was picking up energies and I already know that there was a lot there. And he was so creative and so imaginative. And I just felt like he just was really had so much shame and guilt in his life and just had some super traumatic events happen too that kind of just clouded that for him. So I truly do believe that I was mirroring as soon as I plugged in at 9. I think I started to take that on because do I still struggle with impulsive suicidal thoughts every once in a while? Yes. Have I done a lot of work? So it's hard to tell. Yes, I continue to do work on myself. However, I will say that after my dad's passing, I have not tried to take my own life. And that was 10 years ago. That has never gotten to that such intense place.
Yeah.
And the last time, like I said, the last time that I tried to take my life was 2013. My dad took his life 2014. So it goes back to like we were saying, picking up on things. Had he already solidified it back then? I don't know.
Right. Well, and beyond time, where, you know, it's like it's all happening simultaneously anyway. I wondered, and you answered my question, if after he died, if the urgency to step off this mortal coil for you, like the urgency to commit and to commit suicide changed. And so, and it sounds like, which really makes me wonder how much of this was your agreement to carry his burden as opposed to really your own thing. So you were saying that you had this, you know, you had this dark night of the soul, you had this point of just coming into Ayurveda, but also recognizing like, oh, I have to do all of this work. There are all of these patterns I have to unbreak. There's all this stuff. And, you know, I mean, there is clearly a journey from the I have to do all this work to becoming the author of Cleanse Your Energy and the co-host of Goddess and Medicine Woman, and this practitioner who's helping other people. I'd love to hear a little bit about just, you know, that period of time where you took up the gauntlet of self-care and you started to be like, okay, I need to do this work.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was 2015 when I graduated college 6 months after my dad died, which was intense, but I did it. And then I was like looking for jobs outside of school. So I went to school for psychology and I was working with children with autism. But at that time, it didn't pay very well. So I was looking for other jobs and I saw that there was an Ayurveda center in Pittsburgh where I live that was hiring. And I saw the word and immediately was super intrigued by it. And I started Googling and I was literally like, what the actual F? This exists on the world? Like, how did I never know about it? So then they were hiring for bodywork technicians. So I was like, I'm going to just apply. So I did. I went for my interview. Luckily, the doctor loved me and I started training. And as soon as I started training the bodywork, like people were astonished. They were like, this is natural to you. Like I did one of my very first treatments. My client loved me. Like, and it was my very first treatment. And it just came so natural. I just started to know. And I'm not even joking. My hands. It's not natural to like my brain. It's natural to my hands. Like I can do what I do with my eyes closed. And I often do. Like because as soon as I get into it, my hands just know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like so wild because I also grew up being someone who hates touching people and hated being touched.
Mm.
And then because there's that energy transfer.
Right.
But there was something different with Ayurveda and doing the body work that like my hands were given permission and I could intuitively know where things were and I was feeling their emotion and I could feel these things. And I was like, started to say things and people are like, what? How are you picking that up? It was like a safe place for me to be myself.
Yes.
So it started to give me so much permission for me to be myself that, and I was seeing people get better and they were healing that I was like, I need to start practicing this. So I started practicing Ayurveda first. So I started doing oils on myself and doing oils on my body. And I remember started to take on mantras and affirmations and started applying the oil on my body while saying an affirmation, like I'm coming home to myself. I feel good in my body, whatever it is, because after you try to take your own life, a lot of distrust happens. You tend to feel very like distrustful of yourself. So it was first I started with feeling better in my body. And then I started to do what's called Kundalini yoga. So I started to do Kundalini yoga and I did Kundalini yoga very extensively for 5 years. I still dabble with it, but I was a part of a group that I'm no longer a part of for 5 years. And so I found them in 2015 too. So it was like the universe already knew like what was to happen. My dad died in April of 2014. I had started working at the Ayurveda Center and got involved in my yoga group in like, I want to say like early 2015, like maybe March 2015. So not that far after. So that was like amidst to the dark night of the soul. And I was doing all this breath work and I started to kind of like get this idea. And my yoga teacher at the time really did help me to understand I needed to cleanse my energy. Mm-hmm. I needed to cleanse and I needed to find that basic foundation that I was operating on of the suicidal thoughts and this dark energy, because we tend to build energetic layers on top of each other. So I started to do a lot working with my mind, working with my mental body, also recognizing that we are multifaceted and that I'm not just physical, that I'm physical, I'm mental, I'm emotional, I'm spiritual, like recognizing and realizing that I have an energy body. That was profound. As soon as I learned that I have an energy body, like so much changed for me. So what we don't recognize and realize is that our energy body is that mid body. So there's our physical body and then there's our energy body and then there's our mental, emotional, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then there's our radiant bliss. Mm-hmm. But it's that energy body that we need to take really care of because it's that filter. It's almost like that air filter.
Yes.
And we literally can fuel it and help it by our breath. So once I started to realize that, and that also we're not just picking up like what we're seeing, we're picking up thoughts, vibrations, objects are talking, animals are talking, human beings are like everything in our environment, our energy body is picking it up just by when you walk into a grocery store. Like you are picking up all the energy of everything that's in there. Mm-hmm. So once I started to realize that, and especially as someone who's highly sensitive or an empath or neurodivergent or whatever, we tend to take it on as our own.
We do.
So yeah. I was seeing how so much stuff inside of me, my feelings and stuff, why I was having all this anxiety was because I was trying to process other people's stuff. Right. And that's what we started talking about at the beginning. That was not working for me. No. I needed to cleanse my energy and I needed to create boundaries and I needed to say, return to sender.
Exactly. Exactly.
So one that has helped so much.
So much. One of the things I've also come to realize is that, you know, in doing the work of the five steps of empathic mastery of recognize, release, protect, connect, and act, what I've come to understand is that if you just release, but you don't get underneath to the core agreement and belief system that we have about our identity as an empath, we're going to be in this perpetual cycle of taking on, releasing, taking on, releasing, taking on, releasing. And what I realized was that in order to really untangle this, we have to transmute the faulty belief and operating code in the operating system that says if you can feel it, you need to heal it. That, you know, and just that idea of what our role as empaths is. Like you were and I, before we got on, you know, turned on the recording, we were talking about this process of empaths processing the emotions of the world. And really, it's like, yes, we are aware of it, but but being aware of it does not necessarily mean that it's our job to do all the emotional heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. It's like people have to, in the same way that the drunk has to wake up in their vomit in order to get what they're doing, we as a planet need to wake up into, and like everybody's going to have to feel their stuff. We can't be responsible for it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So we are just barely hitting that, you know, that point where I'm going to say, oh my goodness, Sydney, I can't believe how fast the time has gone by. And I definitely wanted to make sure that we had a chance to talk about your book, Cleanse Your Energy, a practical guide to proper energy hygiene, basically a practical guide to energy hygiene. Tell us a little bit more about your book, because it sounds like it was a lot of hard won awareness.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the last, honestly, 6 years has prepared me to write this book. These are practices that I've been doing for a long time in my life. And it's just been something, the mantra that's been like in my brain, cleanse your energy. Like I said, certain people in my life has helped me to kind of wake up to that of the cleansing of the energy, like my yoga teacher and different people and practitioners that I've worked with and just kind of created that for me. But when I was sitting on my couch back in April of this year, 2023, I was just mindlessly sitting there and I heard this voice that I sometimes hear that's like, go grab your computer, you're going to write a book. And I was like, this is interesting. I'm going to write a book. Okay, about what? And I just heard the title loud and clear, Cleanse Your Energy. And I was like, okay. So me, my ego being like, I don't even friggin' know. Okay. So I go and I grab my computer and I just open it and I just start typing. And it took me about like 8 hours of just like full flooded. What is your energy body? What is energy? What can clog your energy? The ways in which I was like, how many ways do I give these people? Like there's so many, but I just heard seven. Seven is a spiritual number. Seven is a good number. It's an intuitive number. It's a good place to start. So I just created seven ways to cleanse your energy. And then I put it a quiz in the book too, that kind of helps you recognize and realize like, okay, where is my energy? And it's very simple questions that I love, but it's like, oh, so this has a lot to do with my energy body too, not just my physical or my mental. It's like, this is what this is. So I put some really awesome quotes in there to help people with energy to kind of help understand. But basically what I feel and realize is that my gift to the world is to let people know that energy is real. Mm-hmm. And that energy is real. It's not something that needs to be completely identified with religion either. It can be very practical. It can be very simple. Like we turn our lights on and off. That's energy. Electricity is energy. We don't operate and say that it's a god, right? It's just energy. Mm-hmm. So sometimes mm-hmm. that will block people when we start to talk about energy. So I just wanted to make it super practical. This is what your energy body is. This is how it shows up. This is what can get stuck in it. These are very simple ways that you can start to cleanse and clear it today. Like you don't have to go see anyone if you don't want to. That is the seventh way to go get help. But there's other ways that you can do at home. And it's simple. Being in nature, not just like being in nature, being a part and practicing and being intentional with nature. Cleansing baths. Cleansing baths have been so amazing for me. And so at so many times in my life, breath work, visualization, journaling. There's just so much in there. And like I said, that quiz really will help you to get more clear on where your energy body is. And then there's even like a scale that grades the quiz that I pull out the ways in which I think will most support you by where your energy body is right now. So it's just like a very good way to help people realize, I should pay more attention to my energy and that it doesn't have to be woo-woo, voodoo to cleanse and clear it. I can hop in the tub. I can go outside. I can grab a pen and a paper. And so that's just what I really wanted to help people to realize is that it's time for us to take responsibility, like you were just saying,
reach
for our own energy, because as an empath, I'm asking people to do this because I don't want to have to process, and I've decided I will not process other people's stuff.
Yeah.
Because kind of like we're seeing in the world and like I saw with my dad, I can't. Ultimately, they're going to make their own choice.
They are.
But if we can all be responsible and we can all start to recognize and become aware, one, it will help your life tremendously. Like it's created such a, I have tools now that whenever I even get obsessive, impulsive thoughts, go to nature, get my journal, whatever it is first, before I make any choices, I got to cleanse and clear what energy is mine and what have I just taken in from the world today? Or did I talk to someone that had a really bad day? Is this my anger mine or not? I don't know. Get real with it. And I think that it's going to help and serve a lot of highly sensitive and empathic people too, that are just starting to start out on this path. And it's going to help people that have been on it for a really long time. It's like, I gave it to someone who's been on a healing journey for a really long time. And they were like, thank you for the simple reminders.
Exactly.
As you deepen, sometimes you think it's got to be like this big ceremony and it's like, oh yeah, I could just grab a pen and paper. Totally
keep
forgot.
It simple. Well, and you know, sometimes it really is also just like, it's the perfect moment. It's just said in the way that it lands. And I think we are constantly needing to be reminded of just return to center, mm-hmm. return to what really matters. So now, Sydney, we are at the point where I go, oh my goodness, I cannot believe how fast the time has gone by. I mean, you and I could, there are so many tangents and so many places that I could have taken this conversation. There's so much that you're talking about that is actually corresponds with the book that I'm writing and that, you know, and what the channeled messages, what they're saying. It's amazing to me. Just like we're all getting a lot of the same information. But at this point, because of the fact that we are sort of getting to that top of the hour, I've got the three questions that I've got for you. The first one is, what else? What will you kick yourself if you don't share? Then we're going to do the time travel exercise. And then finally, how do we reach you? So let's start with the what else. What else do you feel like if you just tuned in? Is there anything else that just feels really important to talk about or say?
I think that the biggest thing that's been coming up for me that I just really would like people to be aware of, and I recognize that when this is put out, it's not going to be tomorrow.
Right.
But I still believe that we will be in a similar energy for when this is released. And
oh, yeah, we've got a ways to go. We're in the beginning stages of I don't even know if we're in hard labor yet, but we're in the
exactly.
We got a ways to go.
Yeah. So I just really want to remind people that we are a part of a collective and that the collective creates an ocean. And sometimes mm-hmm. we will forget our individual drop in that ocean And we may start to go down some streams of darkness or fear or anxiety or anger or overwhelm. However, I just want to remind everyone that of their individual drop and how important it is to stay in that space of in their heart. And for us to deepen and continue to come home to our heart spaces, as much and uncomfortable as it is, and as painful as it is sometimes to be there as things release from our heart. But the world has been operating from a mental body, which is very limited for a very long time. And that it is very much the time of the heart, and that it's our hearts that are going to save us. It is not our minds. Trying to solve the same problem from the same level of consciousness, which as Einstein said is insanity. And so the next level of consciousness is going to be our heart spaces. And there is deep, deep, true wisdom in the physical heart. It holds memory. It is where our imaginations come from. And it is actually where our dream states come from, not just the brain. And so I just want to invite and encourage people that in these times, you're going to see things, you're going to hear things, and people around you may be losing it. But if you come home and you go into your heart space and you create a light there, that will be the saving grace that we are all looking for. And that is the message that is continuously trying to pour itself more and more from my mouth every day.
Yes, preach. You said it in slightly different ways, but I am receiving and have been getting the same message. We must return to our hearts. And our hearts are the portal to the universal heart of love. The hearts are the connector that allows us to understand the magnitude of what we truly are. Mm-hmm. And through being in the place of love, compassion, and grace in our heart, we will turn this around. Mm-hmm. But just like any other birth or most birth, it's a little messy, you know? It's not necessarily easy. But, you know, some of us are here to be calmer, to be the calm midwife, the doula, the ones who are like, keep breathing. We're going to get through this.
Yes.
Okay. Sydney, the next piece is the time travel thing.
Okay.
And as I had told you, because you and I tried to record this episode a while back and we had all kinds of technical difficulties, but you may recall that what I really believe is that podcasts exist outside of time. They live on the server and they're heard for years to come. But they're like, the broadcast to me is like a stone that drops in the river of time and it ripples both ways. And the ribbon of time or the river of time can fold over on itself. And so I believe that you and I have the ability to go back to a younger Sydney and to deliver a very precise, very specific message that she needs to hear. So my question is always, where, when, who are we going back to? And then let it rip. Tell her what she needs to hear. I'm not going to say, what would you say? Because I want to hear you speak directly to her. So let's just set in the GPS of the time space coordinates of where we're going, the who is the Sydney we're going back to, and then talk to her.
Okay. So I am going to go back to that 9-year-old me. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to see that part of myself. So I call on her. And I'm just going to let her know that she never has to dull her magic or her sparkle or her shine, and that it is not my responsibility to take on the pain or the suffering of anyone else, because ultimately it is their responsibility to integrate that into their own life, and that I choose myself and that I love myself. And that I am magical and I am beautiful and I am strong, and that it's okay to be who I am, and that it's okay to allow my father to be who he is, and that everything is going to be okay.
Everything is going to be okay. It is okay to be who you are. And it is okay to let your father be who he is. It is okay to let your magic in this world. It is okay to be the imaginative, wonderful, creative person that you are. It is okay to shine.
Yes.
You are safe. You are loved. You are worthy.
Yes.
Okay, final question. How do we get in touch with you?
So you can find my services at www.innerelementwellness.com. That will have my Ayurveda services. I can do Ayurveda wellness consultations virtually. Body work is obviously very difficult to do virtually.
Yes, a little hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows in the future, but I'm just kidding. But I also
actually,
have...
if you ever saw the Amazon Prime series Upload,
no,
it's a silly little comedy about the afterlife and these people who basically get uploaded to this like grand hotel in a server and they have these virtual lives. So
that's cool.
Yeah. But you can wear these VR suits and you can experience the sensation. So anyway,
yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, who knows in the future? But I have energy work and shadow work series. It's an 8-week series on there that I can also do virtually. And that's my Inner Alchemy program. It's 8 weeks, step into self, turn your pain into your power. So that's really working with the mental body, the emotional body. And I do a lot of bring a lot of my cleanser energy practices into there too. And then my podcast, The Goddess and the Medicine Woman, there's a link to it on my website as well. However, you can find us on iHeartRadio, Amazon, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, basically most streaming platforms. And then my book, right now you can get the e-version on my website. And the only other place that you can get it is Amazon. I self-published through there, so you can order that on Amazon. Cleanse Your Energy, you can just type that in the search and it comes up. And most places, like I said, I have a lot on my website, innerelementwellness.com. And I put like links to other podcasts that I've been on as well. So I share stuff like that. I have a free gratitude course for anyone. It's a 5-day gratitude course that's on my website as well. Then you can follow me. I mostly just use Instagram. So you can follow me. My personal page is at Citarella. Then I have at Inner Element Wellness and then at The Goddess and the Medicine Woman as well.
Awesome. And we will be including the link to the book and to Sydney's website in the show notes. So if you come over to empathicmasteryshow.com, you can also get that. If you are just out and about and not necessarily remembering the URL, just come over here and we'll help you with it. Sydney, thank you so much for such a powerful, honest, just rich conversation. This has just been delicious.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me and for willing to have me come back on. I'm excited to be here for Halloween. And I just wanted to say, and I mean this genuinely, thank you for the work that you're doing for this world and this planet as an empath and for the book that you wrote, for support and the book that's coming out. And just as someone who is a projector as well, I know it's a very powerful place to be in this lifetime. And I just want to say that I see you and I thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And right back at you, Sydney. I mean, it's just wonderful to see your willingness. You took up the mantle and instead of like crumbling, you said yes. Thank you for saying yes.
Thank you.
As we come to the end of this episode, I'd love to hear what you're taking from this show. Please jump over to empathicmasteryshow.com to leave your comments. In the show notes, you'll find a link to grab your copy of My Empathic Safety Guide, 3 Basics for Finding Calm in the Eye of the Storm. And while you're there, please subscribe and follow this show. And thank you for your help sharing this show with the people who need it. Please help me to spread the word and send this podcast to friends or family members who need support living as highly sensitive empathic people. Then join me again when the next Empathic Mastery Show airs. Okay, one last time. Hop over to empathicmasteryshow.com for your empathic safety guide. And until next show, shine on. We need you and your gifts here on this planet. So please don't judge your empathic rainbow by colorblind standards.